Good morning, everybody. Thanks for coming. It's a lovely day out there, so I appreciate you taking one of your spring hours of daylight and coming to listen. So taking refuge in Buddha, taking refuge in Dharma, taking refuge in Sangha. I hope the ancestors will not be troubled and will be here to help me deliver their wisdom. So from time to time, we get discouraged in our practice and thoughts arise like, what's the point? I can't bear it. What can I have faith in? Somebody said to me recently, well, Buddhism doesn't have a god. So essentially they were asking, where do I take refuge? Where's the Buddhist refuge? And we all have this stuff going on for us. We've all asked these questions. This is a struggle no human is unfamiliar with. So how do we relate to these struggles in a way that is ennobling? When we're in the darkness of discouragement, we may want to give up on our practice. And like many things in Buddhism, the paradox is, that's exactly the time to practice. This is why it's so important, really, to invest in a consistent daily practice, particularly daily meditation. But chanting and mindfulness are also very helpful practices. If we're chanting at the very least.
Could you speak up a little or maybe adjust the mic? Because with the fan on and we've got the heating and air conditioning, we can't turn it off because it's in process. And I think I'm having a hard time hearing in the front row. So.
Let's see. Let's just try. Testing.
There we go. So maybe microphone closer to you.
I don't know anything about this, but let's just do it while it's here. Testing. Is that? I feel like. But not quite as good as testing. All right. Well, if nothing else, maybe this will keep my short talk shorter than it otherwise would be. All right, so why is it so important to do a consistent daily practice? And why is that particularly helpful when we're the most discouraged with it, when we're ready to throw in the towel? Or we're really, I think we're looking for hope. We're looking for energy. We're looking for relief. Now I'm going to say something here that has appeared in just about everything I've ever studied on Buddhism. And Katagiri Roshi also said this. One must practice with the attitude. When you want to practice, practice. When you don't want to practice, practice. When things are going well, practice. When things are not going well, practice. When you feel peaceful or awake, practice. When you don't feel peaceful or awake, practice. And then from the Venerable Ajahn Chah, who's known for his toughness. Whether you see the point or you don't see the point, practice. So it's much like exercise. We probably all had some experience, some better, some of us better than others, with saying, I'm going to exercise, have a regular exercise program. I know it's good for me. Right? And we have good days and bad days. And we fall off the exercise bandwagon. And then things happen to us. And And suddenly we go, oh, I really have to exercise. So our practice of meditation and of peace of mind is exactly like that. And as we all know, sometimes it's just hard to get inspired about exercising. It seems like there's a lot in the way. But that's the very time to notice our suffering. One of the important parts of noticing our suffering is it reveals to us the dangers of the three poisons of greed, anger, and ignorance. We do a tremendous amount of suffering, basically trying to get what we want when we want it. And the thing about that is it's not more than a few moments of pleasure, really. I think many of you are familiar with my now somewhat fading potato chip addiction. And the famous Lay's, I bet you can't eat just one. I bet that too. I won't take that bet. But how much of the potato chips do I really appreciate? Maybe the first one. It's usually a greed thing or a comfort thing. It's not something that I'm really present for. And even if I was present for it, eventually you run out of potato chips. So then you have to go get some more. And that's what we do moment after moment in our lives. We are continuously, unendingly looking for the next few moments of pleasure or relief from the next few moments of pain. That's exhausting. That's why we call it suffering. We kind of get used to it, but we don't. That's why we show up at places like this and say, what's the point? Almost asking somebody to convince us.
Is this? Maybe just you could put it up your thigh on your.
You think if I put it up higher?
If you put it on the lapel again, try it.
Lillian, I don't think we're supposed to turn that off.
No, we aren't.
Don't turn that off. Lillian,
stop yourself.
No, it isn't. No, please. No, really. I talked to the air conditioning guy. I happened to come in, and I had a long conversation with him, which I wasn't planning on having, but it was very informative. I'm planning to give money to the campaign. All right. Is that any better? No, it really isn't. So. It is? Okay.
Center. Put it on the center.
I'll try. Okay. I give you permission to.
Thank you.
I feel like I should sing an opera.
Sure.
Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. I would like to say once that I had the experience of standing right in front of and being operatized by a young woman who had graduated from opera school. And I've got to tell you, it made me an opera fan right there on the spot. It is really a full body experience to have somebody operatically handle the sound of the universe and have it project from their mouth. All right, I don't have time for side effects. There we go. Whoa. All right. So as we face these moments of what's the point? What is the point? Well, we need to summon our spiritual warrior energy and engage the habits, engage the I can't bear it, engage the discouragement. These are arising from the three poisons. And the three poisons, just like potato chips, aren't permanent. They don't go all the way to the bottom. Our ultimate nature is one of peace and clarity and compassion. But we don't have an inkling, really, about that. You know, we all kind of go, right, okay, if you say so. But what practice is about is having the opportunity to set up the conditions that make it possible for us to experience that nature, which doesn't end, which doesn't require that we go out and, like a squirrel, gather nuts every day to put into our bodies and then start all over again in the next moment. It's important to know the dangers, to really know the dangers. I think I suddenly realized that President Trump is a great way to really appreciate the dangers of the three poisons. And it's not just him. I started looking at this and I realized in my past, in my life, I thought, I have not appreciated the dangers. And when I look back at them with more clarity and more honesty, when my strength, my spiritual warrior strength is up and I say, okay, I'm going to do this mile in the exercise program of Buddhism, then I see my past and I see dangers that, you know, 20 years ago I did with heedlessness, and I see their history. I see how they're playing out even today in my stomach, in my family, and how I see and approach life. So it's important for us to understand how, you know, when we hear people talk in extreme ways, and we all do this from time to time, if not a lot, where we're expressing a strong opinion as if we had enemies out there, as if there was a self that wasn't all tied up in Indra's net of interbeing with everything going on in the world. That's the true nature that we need meditation practice to really be able to taste and experience. It's equally important to know the fact of enlightenment, to know the experience of our ultimate nature. And I don't want to mislead us into looking and saying, oh, okay, so my walking around nature is bad and my ultimate nature is good. They're both included. And it's not a good, bad thing. It's just how things are. It's just how things are. But when we leave out or have no access to the ultimate nature, because the three poisons, first and foremost, are dangerous in that they keep us in the dark, because we're too busy seeing ourselves as separate and behaving and reinforcing those old, ancient, lifetime after lifetime habits that come with our families, with our countries, with our cultures, and who knows about whether there was a you or a me back then, but something was going on, and it's arrived in this future. So it's important for us to know you haven't gotten to the bottom to the bottom of what's real, what's true. So the Buddhist path, the Buddha usually started out just teaching very simply, sounds simple until you do it, be generous, live virtuously, and train the mind. So this is the consistent daily practice part. And I have to say, please don't be thinking that I'm an ace consistent daily practice person. I'm not. I struggle with it. We all wrestle with it. We all wrestle with our limitations, and we need to be patient with that and forgiving. Our habits are not just a story. Our habits are like gophers in the front lawn and dandelions. Or, you know, at the monastery we had Himalayan blackberries, which is kind of like uber blackberries. And they have uber roots and uber thorns and uber berries as well. And so at every point in the year, we were dealing with keeping the Himalayan blackberries from taking over everything. So this is a battle. It is so easy. We read stories about Mara talking to Buddha and sending his daughters and then, you know, trying, inviting him to become a world-changing ruler. You know, you ought to get into politics. You know? And in the stories, Buddha will kind of think about it and then he'll come back and he'll say, I see you, Mara. Sorry, not buying that today. Go on to your next customer. And of course, Mara really isn't separate. Mara is us. We all have Mara. We have inner critics and we have Buddhas. So those energies are within all of us. And so what we need to do really is engage with the powers of the ultimate nature in meeting the strong powers of our old and gnarly habits. Or what is it? What's the verse of atonement?
Twisted
karma from beginningless greed, hate, and delusion. If you were looking for a place to use your Star Wars saber, this is it. But it doesn't look quite as exciting as it does on the movie screen. It's happening moment by moment by moment by moment. And so we need to cultivate this true nature. It's there, but it's not going to be able to manifest. We're not going to be able to taste it without following the recommendations of the Buddha. Share. When we share, we're sharing something actually that we want, right? So in that way, already we're weakening the strength of the three poisons in our system. When we give it away, then we have a chance really to step away from greed and to step into compassion and generosity and realization that it was never ours to begin with and there was never a me to own it. I mean, think about property. Think how much we feel like our houses are us, right? Our lawns, the way they look or don't look, our gardens, you know, very personal. When we leave them, we've invested a lot in them. But the universe doesn't know there's lines around my plot that has, you know, where I'm putting the fence or whose tree is leaning over from somebody else's yard. We make all that stuff up. And that's our habit patterns. It's not like we're doing this on purpose. So we need to have a certain respect for the strength of that habit pattern. And that's why the development of the strength of our enlightenment factors, mindfulness being one of the most important, is imperative and is the point when you're looking for a point, is the refuge when you're looking for a refuge. One of the reasons why daily meditation is so important is when you practice consistently, you begin to trust that which knows. I'm on the wrong page, but I'm doing okay. So part of the point is, why settle for something that you're going to have to continue to go out and get again and again? Those things that we're attached to. When you can get something way, way better. Let's make good use of our greed. If we're going to have this greed, and it's inescapable, right? So what does inescapable or escape from greed look like? It looks like doing daily practice and cultivating mindfulness that's very, very strong. Moment by moment, little by little, getting better and better at being mindful through the day. Moment by moment, little by little, being there and present for the actual experience of our ultimate nature. When we're at ease, when we're at peace, when we have clarity, when when we have humility, when we have compassion. They just kind of zoom by if we're not mindful. Just like the dangers of the three poisons. We just kind of get on the wheel and we're going. Right? We're just going. Oh, got to get another one. Whoop, got to get another one. Whoops, got to get away from that. Whoops, got to, you know. Does this have to happen now? I'm not responsible for creating this problem. Why am I part of it? As opposed to, oh, I think there's me. Oh, the mind is attached to this. Right? Oh, I'm grieving. Not even I'm. There's grief. There's thought. There's feeling. That is an unshakable peace. And that's what we're missing out on. Now, when we do have a daily consistent meditation practice, it's not like the three poisons say, oh, sorry, got to leave this house now. They just keep rising. And if we understand what we're about, and I'm working on that with myself, and hopefully for you too, the material of our suffering is exactly the point of entry. There is no better place to learn dangers and find peace than right in the middle of a corner where you can't stand it and you can't escape it. This is the part of where we just take an honest look at things and we don't take it personally. So when we're doing that, it's important that we notice what a moment of peace is like. It's kind of hard. We heard Byakran one during her five talks. I think it was on a Sunday talk where she said, you know, I've been practicing for 40 years and all of a sudden I realize this is it, you know. And we kind of have that revelation probably a couple of times during years of practice. It's like, oh, you know? Well, it's important to be there for that. It's important to let that be a moment that we're present with, because that's the taste. And this ultimate nature isn't, you know, it isn't a extroverted kind of statement. It doesn't go, you're about to be liberated. This is what it's like. Sit down and enjoy it. It doesn't do that. It masquerades as I'm not in pain or something like that, right? So when we meditate, we get a chance to be a little more reflective, a little more, you know, sort of on task. And we tend to just sort of say, well, that was nice, but now the thoughts are back, now the pain's back, what's the point? And the point went right by, right? It was right there. I don't know how many of you have experienced something at the monastery that they had us go through every year, which was always amazing, which is a movie with a basketball game going on. And while you watch the movie, they say beforehand, okay, we're going to show this movie. There's a basketball game. And we want you to count how many players there are on the floor. So, mindfulness. All right, putting on my mindfulness glasses. There we go. And then at the end, of course, how many players were there? How many answers were there? And then, okay, all of you who said blank, you were right. You know, 10 or whatever it was. Then they said, now, this time when we watch the movie, we're going to have you watch it again. We're going to ask you to look for the gorilla that went through the basketball players. And you kind of go, no, that's not right. And there it is. It's like, how could you possibly have missed it? It is an astounding, an absolutely astounding, small but unforgettable experience to see a very, not live, gorilla right there in the middle. Couldn't miss it if you tried. But if you're not trying, you can. So we have this combination. When we're doing a daily meditation practice, when we stay in that moment that we think we can't stand and wish we could escape, we have an opportunity not to create fresh karma. We can just be with it. Say, this is what's going on. It's a much different moment when we're not totally sucked in, right? Suddenly we can see gorillas, but with a certain dispassion. And there's this tough balance that we all have to wrestle with, where it's like, well, I want to accept whatever's going on, but I don't want to zone out. So we need to and will make mistakes, and we need to be patient and forgiving of our mistakes without letting ourselves off the hook. That's the spiritual warrior part. This isn't, you know, we're Lancelots. We're going out there on the white horse with the shield thing every day. That's our job. You know, there's quiet days and there's, you know, mayhem days. But particularly on the mayhem days, we are going to really benefit from the practice we have had by weakening the three poisons while we're strengthening the spiritual powers of enlightenment. So the actual, when we say do the practice, most of us relate to that as there's me and then there's things I do. There's me and there's my practice. But in fact, just bearing witness, as G.D. would say, is the transformation itself. It is how we taste the experience of the whole of reality in a way that does the transformation of whoever we think we are, however we think transformation happens. That's where it happens. When we do that, we develop trust and confidence and humility, because we all have limitations. We all have strong habits from lifetimes and lifetimes. So when we stay with the practice and we do that like you don't have to wind it clock, we do it consistently, then we essentially find that faith naturally arises in the practice. This trusting of the one who knows, this letting go of having to figure out, this letting go of the notion that we're in control, is a whole shift. And it doesn't happen usually all of a sudden or for very long. But when we do our practice, we are setting up exactly the conditions of having it come up more often and last longer. So this is a kind of lifting up faith. This is, we have faith, so we practice, our faith strengthens. No matter how slowly you seem to be progressing, no matter how powerful habits might seem, they're impermanent. I say that again loudly enough for everybody to hear. They're impermanent. They're not there all the time. Even when I feel like I can't stand my life, if we have a practice to lean back on, take refuge in, we can see that almost as soon as we notice that we're in this, it's not, I can't stand it anymore. I might come back to it like that. It might be, you know, somebody's hitting ping pong balls at me. But with that practice, we can say, oh, somebody's hitting ping pong balls at me. I don't have to take this personally. I could just look at it. And while I'm doing that, I'm becoming a more powerful, more skillful warrior against the three poisons which cause suffering. Hooray for suffering. How would we possibly learn this if we didn't have suffering to pin us down and basically give us air? So we come to appreciate the neutral state. You know, we're all pretty excited about the I gotta have it, I can't stand it part, but this sort of like, it's not necessarily good or bad, but the neutral state has some merits in that it's got some calm to it. We can start getting a little taste of peace. But we have to train the mind to recognize it. That gorilla, we have to train the mind. And of course, we'll make mistakes and fail a lot. But that's just more grist for the training of the mind, for the generosity, for the living in virtue, which involves cessation and renunciation. So this is how we learn that our daily practice is the refuge. Our mindfulness is the refuge. The other stuff that we're chasing after isn't a refuge. And probably that's the first thing we get to see something of when we sit down. It's rather horrifying. It's kind of terrifying in a way. And that's why it's so important to stay there, because right there is where we're going to learn, where we're going to learn about the something better, about what we're leaving out, what we're not noticing, the gorilla that we didn't see. So when we ask what the point is, there's this whole wonderful part of you that you don't know anything about. And when you get in touch with it, even for a finger snap, it strengthens that energy in the world. It strengthens those spiritual muscles of yours. It strengthens mindfulness, which is enormously important, enormously important. So what's the point, you know, with myself, when things come up is I can't bear it, and then I find myself wanting to go into a collapse or eat something or engage in an activity that's diverting, not because I need a rest, but because I'm scared and I'm looking for the way out. I don't want to stay here. So when I think I can't bear it, it's very helpful to ask the question, what are your other options? Early in my practice, I said, what if I can't bear it? That was my question a lot. How much do I have to meditate, and what if I can't bear it? And I would get often from my Dharma siblings and friends and teachers, I would get, you're already bearing it. Sorry, it already happened. You bore it. Start again. Well, so you can try not bearing the next terrible one. Which aroused anger. No, you don't understand. I can't bear it. And this is, you know, I'm smiling and I'm laughing as I say it, But this comes with dark images. It brings up, when we stay with things, sometimes the more virtuously we practice, the more consistently the practice, the more likely we are to have the three poisons come up and try to club us over the head. So this is, you know, don't think that this is going to be a, you know, line up and, you know, it's not even field hockey. It's like, what's the one where rugby, I think it is, or lacrosse, where you whack, you know, you're in it. So what we are doing when we do this daily practice that we really try to avoid or get tired of or feel is useless, the point is we are investing in our own true happiness. And because me isn't really a phenomenon, whether we know it or not, we are affecting the entire Indra's net. There's just more strength in it when we're practicing in that way. We're investing in it. You know, it's like in the world of finance, they'll say, invest in good quality stuff that's, you know, aligns with your level of risk tolerance, and just keep doing it. Don't stop. Just keep doing it. It's like IRAs when they say, how much money will you have if you start, you know, when you're 20, putting in a nickel? And that's the way it feels when you first start practice. You know, I've only got pennies. You know, I'm not even sure I have pennies. Put your penny in the slot. Put your penny in the account of enlightenment, of realizing nirvana. That's our duty to the third noble truth. There is a path of non-suffering. Realize it. So we're investing in realizing it. And we really don't know what we're missing. So the practice is the way of finding that out, so that we strengthen our understanding of how different it is to be operating in a mind that's not oppressed by the three poisons, that isn't owned by Mara. So that's the point. That's the point. And this is not a slot machine that will keep giving us things. It will come when it comes, and it will go when it goes. So I just want to dwell on something that's very important to me in working with my own practice, which is this consistency thing. I'm pretty good at persevering and beginning again. I'm not so good at that, you know, like practice the piano kind of a thing where you sit down and you do your scales. And yet, think about it this way. What if you said to yourself, I am going to eliminate all the dandelions in my lawn. And then about, every other day, sometimes longer when you go on vacation, you're not working on uprooting those dandelions. Then what happens? You come back to doing your practice again, and the ones you pulled up are already replaced, right? There's already new dandelions there. I'm not getting any. So we create with our own three poisonous habits, we create the very barriers we can't bear, that cause us to give up. If we see that with clarity, then we have a way of standing up and meeting it. I was just reading in the book that's the basis of the movie, Hidden Figures. And part of that story is about the black women who are mathematicians who get put aside into a special building, coming to the cafeteria, which is where both black and white mix. And on one or two tables, there are a sign that says, colored people. one of the mathematicians, a woman I think named Miriam, took up the practice of simply removing it. And then in a few days it would reappear. And she would remove it. And then in a few days it would reappear. And she would remove it. And it went on for years. But she didn't give up. Her husband was scared to death. He thought, they're going to fire you. They're going to know it's you. She said, well, then that's going to be what happens. And she just kept removing it. And one day, it didn't get replaced. It just quietly didn't get replaced. This is not an exciting practice. Except when it is. Right? Except when it is. But that's the consistency issue. We actually discourage ourselves when we're not consistent. We make ourselves want to give up on ourselves. So along with me, let's have a pact. We'll be patient with the fact that we're not all that good at being consistent. But we'll keep trying humbly with faith and a certain amount of trust and confidence, and give ourselves a chance along with the rest of Indra's net. I think it's pretty much time to go. Do we have any comments or questions that people want to put forth?
Distinction between sitting practice and not sitting practice. I find sometimes my rebellious part is like, well, that sounds to me, that sounds dualistic. Well, yes, you need to sit, but then there's on the other side, everything's practice.
Yeah. Okay, so do you notice a difference between your mind and what it does when you're working, taking a shower, versus sitting in Sashin?
I'm more aware of how my mind is wandering all over the damn place. So it's kind of nice when I'm not practicing. So maybe that's it. And it's like, what good is this doing?
See, enlightenment just happened, right? Right.
Yeah.
That distraction is the characteristic of the three poisons, right? It's just like the going out and getting more potato chips, right? We constantly have to divert the mind so that we don't have to stay there with the mind. And that precludes us from discovering and tasting the very thing that we're actually ultimately looking for. We know it's out there because it's our nature. We know it's kind of like, I'm missing something. We wouldn't know we were missing something. And so it's just, you know, things have their rules. Minds quiet down more readily if the body is still and you do it for a long time, repeatedly. You know, I don't know why ants don't make honey, but that's just the way the world works, right?